You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today is the Monday edition, and there's been some breaking stories over the weekend, and one that will be happening Monday afternoon in Florida. Now, the two breaking stories I want to cover, one happened Saturday, and that was the relaunch, the second launch of Hillary Clinton's presidential race for the nomination, the 2016 nomination for president. And the second story is Jeb Bush will announce Monday afternoon that he's also running for president, but this time on the Republican ticket. Now, the betting public, the odds makers in Vegas, would say that the race will probably be between Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, and Hillary Clinton will win. I'm not a determinist, and I don't think I'm, let me put it this way, I don't think Jeb Bush is going to get the nomination for the Republican Party. Now, Hillary Clinton may get it, but you see, she has actually a much bigger problem than Jeb Bush. There's too much baggage. She's very much damaged goods. She's not popular with the majority of the American people. She doesn't come over well with people in terms of relating to people. And she's rather stiff giving a speech, which are not strong assets for anyone running for president. If it wasn't for the fact that her husband held the office for two terms, despite scandals in the White House of a sexual nature, I don't think she'd be a candidate. As a matter of fact, no one would have ever heard of her. She very much traded on her husband's popularity in the Democratic Party, first to get elected in New York, which I'm originally from. I would never have voted for her, but I understand why New Yorkers would, because New York is a very Democratic and very liberal or progressive state. And she was very much a carpetbagger. She never really lived there. She's from Chicago and spent most of her adult life prior to moving to Washington in Arkansas. But she got elected, and she's used her husband's reputation to try to run for president. Everyone said she was a sure thing in 2008 when literally an unknown and rather inexperienced senator from Illinois beat her out. So I don't think either one of them are going to be president. One of them might get the nomination, and that's probably Hillary Clinton. But Clinton has a reputation. People don't trust her. She's a liar. But I could say that by as well as the president, our current president of the United States. He at least is a little bit more charming and personable. But you see, both of them do have certain things in common besides being liars or habitual liars. They're both very much leftist. They're ideologues of the left. And they both consider themselves, I think, self-identify as progressives. And that is how Hillary is running this campaign that she's on to get the Democratic nomination for president. She's going to the far left. Now, once she gets the nomination, probably at the convention or afterwards, she's going to take a very sharp turn to the right or to the center. I don't think she's going to become a conservative, but she needs to do that if she has any prayer of getting elected. Now, the conventional wisdom is this, and it's hard to argue with the conventional wisdom. The Democratic Party, in terms of electoral votes in the Electoral College, have a large number. you'll get different estimates, but about 240. I'm trying to think of the exact number to win. I think it's 267, but I could be off there. If you accept that, then it's going to be difficult for any Republican candidate, no matter who they are, to defeat her. I don't accept that because I think much depends on who the candidate is. Can they get their message out? And in regards money, I think both parties are trying to get as much money as they can, both for campaigning for the primaries as well as campaigning for the general election. So in the money area, I think they're very much tied. So one of the two parties obviously is going to be ahead, and I would say most likely the Republican Party. And money's key because money enables you to get your message out on radio and television as well as in mailers. And that's very, very important as you approach a primary election in a state. And it's most important when you're approaching, really, you're within a 2 to 3 week window of election day in November. That's where money becomes a very much a determinative factor. But I've said, and I think this is a good example of two candidates, where trust is going to be an issue. It's especially going to be an issue with Hillary Clinton. Now, there are always going to be true believers in both parties, and they are true believers in both parties that will vote for the party's nominee, no matter who it is. And you're going to get very few progressives voting Republican. You're going to get very few conservatives voting Democrat. That's a given. I think the key is trust, and the key is also independence. Because independence of both parties, let me say that over, many of the independents today were former Democrats and Republicans. They left the party. Why did they leave the party? Because they felt they were lied to, misled. In other words, they were told or believed promises that simply weren't kept. And after many years, and it's usually many years, it's not just one election or one election cycle. I'm a good example of it. I come from a family primarily of Democrats on both sides of the family. I come from New York. No surprises there. Now, what you need to understand about New York is I come from New York City. New York City has always been a Democratic stronghold. It's not that on occasion Republicans don't get elected. They do, but they're usually very much liberal or progressive Republicans. What today is called Rhino Republicans, Republicans in name only. The name that comes to mind, and I actually work for the city of New York when he was mayor, is Mayor John Lindsay. Now, many of you that, especially if you're going to college today, don't remember John Lindsay. He was very attractive, very articulate. Many people thought he was going to be a presidential candidate. He looked, I might say similar to, but he had the attractions, he was very much like a Kennedy, but of the Republican Party. So New York City, although predominantly Democratic, and it still is, predominantly liberal, it still is, when you get outside of New York, especially upstate, it's more rural, it's Republican. Now, I haven't kept up with it, and things do change. But New York State overall is very much a blue or Democratic state. So it did not surprise me when Hillary Clinton ran for Senate there and got elected. And I believe the Democratic Party will carry New York State. There are about 10 big states you need to win, and New York is one of them. Some of the biggies are Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, Texas, Michigan, California. I'm leaving one or two out. New Jersey, Massachusetts. Most of those states, with the big exception of Texas, is very much blue state. Florida is what I would characterize as purple. It can go either way because you get a lot of people moving into Florida as well as moving out. Texas right now is a solid red state, but that will change in the next 25 to 35 years because you have a growing Hispanic population. And if the illegal aliens get citizenship, they will tilt the state to blue. And for many, many, many decades, from the Civil War, really, into the 70s, Texas was a Democratic state. You got to realize that. But it was divided. You had conservative Democrats, but you also had very liberal Democrats, such as Lyndon Baines Johnson, who got elected, he got elected president, but became president after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And we have running this time from Texas, two Texans are running for president. Our junior senator, Ted Cruz, who used to be on my short list, I have taken him off. He could get back on, but I've taken him off, largely on the immigration issue. And I'll say I'm going to cover, just a heads up here, I am going to cover and give you an update as to what's happening with the bill to try to get fast track, or what's called TPA, Trade Promotion Authority, for the president to negotiate trade agreements. Now, you need to understand those trade agreements are in the process and have largely been negotiated. But you need the people we're negotiating with, and more or less told the United States trade representatives, they're really not going to go any further until the president, President Obama, gets that authority. And it's understandable why, because both parties initially can make concessions, but they want to make sure when they, especially if they're on the other side of the table from us, that if they're going to make major or last-minute concessions, the other party really has the authority to negotiate. And most presidents, with one notable exception, Nixon, have had fast-track authority. My concern about that authority today is, again, the trust issue. I don't trust President Obama. And because of that, I would not vote to give him fast-track authority. I'll get into that tomorrow, because there are a number of complicating issues here. And one of it is the secrecy, especially there are three parts to this negotiation. And what most people are not aware of, and I wasn't aware of it until last week, and I don't blame myself because the details are not public. It was only leaks that made it public, and then I became aware of it, that there's an immigration aspect to the trade bill. Even though many assurances have been made by this administration that they will not change in any way immigration law. Well, apparently, if you read the agreement, or at least the draft that was leaked, that's not the case. And when I found out about that, I changed my position. So I'll get on that tomorrow. What I want to focus in on, though, is these two announcements and what's my reaction to it. I haven't listened to the entire speech, but I have read several articles by reporters that quoted the highlights of Hillary Clinton's speech on Roosevelt Island between Manhattan and Queens Saturday. And if you're not from New York, Roosevelt Island, it's not easy to get to. It is a little island between the two major boroughs. You can get to it. I've never been on it. I've been near where you can go over to it. It was fairly well attended, but it wasn't a large crowd. Estimates are it was a little over 5,000. There were plenty of seats, but they were not filled. And I listened to the speech on the news as well as significant portions of it. And one of the reactions I had was, first, she's reading it, but more importantly, it sounded like a computer reading a speech, synthesized speech. I don't know how you would call it. And it was the usual Democratic progressive positions. Nothing new there. It's apparent that she's going to make income equality an issue. And I always am amazed, not surprised, but amazed, that they go on and on about, and I'm talking Democrats and in particular progressives, about income inequality, but never connect the dots. And what I mean by that is a question I would ask over the years, and I'm saying decades, what's changed? What has been the fundamental trend in the United States and the United States economy over the last 50 and actually 100 years? Over time, the size and the scope of the federal government have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And as a result of that, taxes and debt have gone up, up, and up to finance or pay for the fact that government has gotten larger and larger. Now, what does that mean? It means businesses, employers, but primarily businesses, are increasingly taxed at very high rates, which means they keep less of their money. And why is that critical? Who are the major job creators in the United States? It is small, new businesses. You see, economic incentives are key. And where you're in a situation where government, the federal government in this instance, is increasing taxes, and that's what's happened under Obama, and they get a large percentage of the GDP, two things happen. You first of all, amongst existing businesses, you don't have capital formation. In other words, they're not investing in plant and equipment, vehicles, offices. They're not expanding their business. Why? Because the money that they could have spent doing that is taxed away. The other thing is, it's a disincentive for entrepreneurs to start a new business. What that means is jobs are not being created at the level or rate that you need, first to grow the economy, but more importantly, to improve the economic purchasing power of the employees. In other words, their pay is not rising. You get paid, anyone gets paid, that's an employee, based on their productivity. And your productivity largely depends on how much capital you have to work with. You see, you could dig a ditch using a spoon. Not very efficient, and it'll take you a lot of time. Compare that if you had a shovel, or even better yet, a bulldozer. And that's an easy way, a small example, just to illustrate the idea of productivity. One man with a bulldozer can accomplish an awful lot when you compare to people with a shovel, or in a worse case, a spoon. Now, that's just to illustrate the point. So the American worker can be more productive to the extent that he has more capital to work with, and that requires the incentive for businesses to do that. A disincentive is where you have a lot of cheap labor. In other words, the invasion of the United States by people that don't speak the language, don't understand the language, but they're looking for a job, mainly manual labor. Now, not all the illegal aliens that are here are from Mexico, although the majority are. Not all of them are coming across the U.S.-Mexican border. Those that do are largely from Mexico, as well as other Central American countries. Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, to name three, but also the Caribbean. About 30 to 50%, no one knows the exact percentage, are people that come to the United States on a visa, either a student visa or a tourist visa or a business visa, and they don't live up to the terms of that visa, that namely they have to leave the country within a certain period of time, and they overstay their visa, and they work here. Because we've had such a massive invasion, what has happened to the incomes of the American people? They've been stagnating because, ladies and gentlemen, it's not 11 or 12 million. Over the last 15 to 20 years, there's been somewhere between 30 and 50 million illegal aliens that have invaded our country, breaking all laws. So I get a kick out of the fact that Hillary Clinton is even going to go further. At least this is what she's saying now, because she's playing to her far left wing. She's going to go further than Obama on immigration. Well, that's interesting. He's breaking the law, and what he's doing is unconstitutional, and I'm waiting for the court to finally reach a decision on that. Now, I know the Obama administration is going to appeal, but stay tuned on that one. That will be a very interesting decision. Anyway, she wants to outdo Obama in the immigration area. And what she's really primarily talking about, is illegal aliens. She wants to make illegal aliens citizens so they can vote. Yet she's making this a key part of her campaign. She is playing identity politics. Now, it's hard for the average Joe or Jane to identify with Hillary Clinton. Many of them don't want to identify with Hillary Clinton because the Clintons have amassed a small fortune, and I emphasize small, over $100 million, and that's been in the news. They're using their charitable foundation, as far as I'm concerned, to collect bribes. Now, even with all this baggage, and even when people are going to point out that her positions are inconsistent, I think. You see, if both political parties truly enforce immigration law, and both parties are guilty of this, that's one reason I'm not for Jeb Bush. If both political parties had enforced immigration laws that are on the books today, we wouldn't have a stagnating economy. Why? Because employers would, first of all, need to replace at much higher wages and higher benefits tens of millions of illegal aliens that are currently working here. And because they would have to pay more money, one thing they would do is try to make those employees more productive is by making investments, assuming they had the money. In other words, most businesses, especially small businesses, when they earn profits, they don't spend the profits on themselves. They reinvest it in the business so they can hire more people, grow their business, open new offices, retail stores, restaurants, what, depending on the business they're in. And when they do that, they obviously need people. But they invest to make the people they do hire more productive. And when they're more productive, they get a higher wage or salary. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is the federal government is out of control. And Hillary Clinton's answer is more government spending. She thinks that's the answer. And to tax those that earn high incomes. Now, I need to say this. If you go to the companion blog for my show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com, that's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K-P-O-P-S, .wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see my picture of me in the studio. Underneath, links to the most recent 60 to 80 of the shows. But under that, I give you some of the information I looked at preparing the show. And I have a chart. It's the distribution of federal taxes in 2014. Now, I'm sure some of you are scratching your head. Why does he have this chart when he's talking about Hillary Clinton giving her announcement? Well, it's a lot of people just aren't aware that it's really the top 10% of the, let me say it this way, it's the top 10% in terms of the salaries that these people earn. In other words, those that are making, and you can see the chart, those that are earning more than $200,000 and over, and I don't consider that a lot of money. I consider that okay, comfortable. But for those at $200,000 and over, they are paying right at 70% of all federal taxes. And if you look at the group between $100,000 and $200,000, they pay about 25%, actually a little higher. You see, the people between $0 and $50,000 really don't pay taxes. And the only taxes they do pay, and the next chart shows it underneath, are payroll taxes. Now, I showed these charts for a reason. Hillary Clinton, like Obama, is demagoguing this issue. She goes on and on about very successful people, but never mentions how much taxes they're paying. And there are IRS statistics that I don't have on this page, but you can look them up. The Tax Foundation publishes it usually in the October time frame. It's always going to be a little bit behind, but they're based on IRS numbers. The bottom 50% of people earning income and reporting it to the IRS pay less than 3% in personal income taxes. Yes, they're going to pay payroll taxes. You see, it's the top 50% that pays most of the taxes, and really, of that group, it's really the top 10%. And if you look at more details, in that Tax Foundation does give a breakout by like 1%, 5%, 10%. It's that top 1% that, yes, they earn the lion's share of the income, but they pay more, significantly more in taxes. I point this out because many of your small and new as well as existing small businesses, they earn profits, but they reinvest it. And when you increase their taxes, that leaves them less money to invest. Government is the problem. If government would get out of the way, reduce regulation, reduce the tax rate, you would have a booming economy. And the irony is the government would actually, in the long run, collect more in taxes. So I listened to Hillary Clinton, and I'm not at all persuaded. And I also looked at her from the voter that doesn't follow this. And that's where the danger is. There are a lot of people that simply are not interested in politics at all. They don't follow this at all. And to the extent they tune in on this, it's right before an election, whether it's the primary or the general election. And how do they vote? Largely, unfortunately, it's identity politics. What do I mean by that? Hillary is pushing hard the fact that she wants to be the first woman president. So a lot of women in this country will vote for her for that reason alone, even though they may very well know that she lies, can't be trusted, is not very competent. But they will vote for her because she's a woman. Others will vote for her because she's a Democrat or she's a progressive or liberal. And that is the overwhelming majority of the voters. They don't make informed decisions. Now, to be fair to them, They have lives to lead, children to raise. They're trying to get an education, so they tune out. I was in that situation. I remember just reflecting, there are many, many years that I did not pay any attention to politics at all. And it was largely because I was either running a business or trying to grow a business, or I was in the military. I just didn't pay attention to politics. It didn't mean I didn't have a preference. I certainly voted my preferences, but I certainly didn't follow this every day or week. And I was like the vast majority of the American people. I started to focus in on it usually sometime in mid to late October. That assumes that I did not already make up my mind. But did I really look at the person in terms of first? And this is what I do, and I encourage other people to do. Before you even go research the candidate's position on a number of issues, sort of the threshold question with me, is this a person I can trust? Another way of asking that question, is this a person of integrity? Does the person have character? And if the answer to that is no, I don't go any further. I don't care what their position is. And that's very rational. Why? Because if a person will lie to you, you can't believe what they say. They might be saying everything you want to hear. Everything. And if not here, identify with. And people do fall in love with candidates. They fall in love with salesmen. And I'm not talking romantic love here. But they like the person. He's like me. He's white. He's a Christian. He's from the same part of the country I'm at. There are a whole host of reasons why people identify with other people. And both parties, as well as most candidates, make that emotional appeal in their messages that they're targeting you to receive. And they test those messages. They're not going to tell you their shortcomings. They're not. They're not going to make your job as a citizen easier. If anything, they make it more difficult. Sometimes you're in a situation, you say, who do I believe? I don't know. So trust is definitely going to be, in my opinion, very much a threshold question. And the reason is this. We have a president for by the time the elections are held, would be in office over 7 years. When he was running the first time, most people really didn't know much about Barack Obama. Even the people that follow this will tell you that. You had to do a lot of research to dig in, and I did. And I, rather early, before the election, said, this guy lies, I can't trust him. And I definitely, politically, was not in his camp. I'm for limited government. I'm not for someone that thinks the answers to society's problems is another law, another regulation, another tax, another government program. And that's Barack Obama. But more important to me was I couldn't trust him. I can't believe what he says. And that turns off people. It really does turn off people. I've heard other commentators make this statement, and I'll make it here. When this is an habitual habit and you want to listen to the president's speech, but you have difficulties doing so for the reason is you literally know a lot of what he says is lies and a lot of what he says is very misleading, and you don't have time to sort that out. So eventually you literally cringe having to listen to him. Many times what I do is I read the text. I'd rather read the text than listen to them. It's less painful. But here's what I know. A couple of things. Do you think someone that really doesn't follow politics and really votes for a person because he identifies with them, do you think they research and look at the president's statements? No. They accept it. Blindly accept what he's saying. And that is what politicians of both parties take advantage of. You see, what I'm trying to say is, you get the government you deserve. And if you're not willing to what I say, do your homework, research it, check it out. Instead, vote for a candidate of either party because he's like you. Identify with him without checking whether or not he's honest. Is he a person of character? And in what his positions are on the issues, if you don't do that, you're going to get what you vote for. and you have no reason to complain when it doesn't turn out well. And it hasn't turned out well for tens of millions of Americans. See, I look at Hillary Clinton very much a third and fourth term of Barack Obama. She's not going to make any dramatic changes from what Barack Obama has done. And because of that, I don't see any dramatic changes in economic policy that are going to have any real positive impact on job creation and economic growth. It's just going to be more of the same. Both of them are cut from the same cloth. The difference is race, and the difference is obviously age and gender. That's what's new. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are both progressives. They were both big followers of Saul Alinsky and his rules for radicals that I don't have time to get into. A matter of fact, Saul Alinsky offered Hillary Clinton a job when she was in law school, and she didn't accept it. But they both admired him. Hillary Clinton wrote her honors thesis undergraduate on him. That's one of the reasons she got Saul Alinsky's attention. Both are radical leftists, and I don't expect much change out of Hillary Clinton. It will be a continuation of what Barack Obama is and has done to this economy. And it's very, very clear she's not going to have any break with the Obama administration. I think that could be a political mistake, because if this economy should go into a recession prior to the election, she might have to throw Barack Obama under the bus. I don't think she's going to do it, though, because there's a lot of disappointment already in the Democratic Party in Barack Obama, because they don't trust him either. And the trade area is one where you see that. Remember, Barack Obama got a big political defeat last week. His Democratic Party voted against him. You see, Barack Obama right now is pushing for having fast-track trade authority, where representatives of the United States, namely the U.S. Trade Representative, which is a cabinet position, would negotiate with either a single country or multiple countries. And once they have reached agreement, if he has fast track authority, for short, Congress then must either vote in favor of it or against it, but there can be no amendments and there can be no filibuster. In other words, there's a limited amount of debate set aside, like 20 hours for discussion. And like I said, most presidents have had that authority, and President Obama wants that authority. And you see, that's why I'm suspicious of these various trade agreements. There's three key parts. I don't trust them. And my answer to the Republicans is very simple. What's the rush, fellas? What is the rush, fellas? We can wait 18 months to a new president is elected, and hopefully that'll be a Republican, or at least someone we can trust. Now, the problem is, if Hillary Clinton gets elected, and she is the odds-on favorite today, you're back to square one. I don't trust her at all. So what do? I'm a free trader. And much of what's in the three parts, I agree with. But I'll tell you, the left, not only the United States, as well as in Europe, the Social Democrats, which are the progressives in the United States, as well as environmentalists, are against these agreements. So if you're a free trader, you're on the other side of this question. And if I were in the House, I would vote for these agreements, provided it did not have any provisions dealing with immigration. And that's the catch. But I would never give this president fast-track authority. Never. You're giving him more or less a blank check. Oh, yeah, you can vote against the agreement, but that seldom, if ever, has happened. It can happen, but it's unlikely. And see, what's curious is Hillary Clinton, when she was in the Senate, was all for fast-track authority and these trade agreements. Now she's not. And when she was Secretary of State, obviously. But now she's on the fence. She won't commit either way. Why? Who's against them? The unions are against them. And that is a major voter constituency of the Democratic Party. Unions, and this is surprises a lot of people, you have what they call public sector unions. There are unions in the government today. The IRS has a union. So Hillary Clinton is the favorite of unions, and the teachers have a union. You can go, where are unions strong? In the government? And what are public schools? They're government schools. You see, union membership in the private sector is way down. It's under 7% the last time I checked. But what's the growing sector of unions. Where is union membership going up, up, and up? It's in the public sector. And that is a large portion of her voter base. So if the unions are against something, she's going to be usually against it. So there's nothing really new, as far as I'm concerned, with Hillary Clinton relaunching her campaign. What is needed, and I'll raise this again, but it looks like he's not going to make an attempt. What the Democratic Party truly needs is a really viable progressive to run against Hillary Clinton. And there are not that many. But I'll name one that is, and that is Governor of California, Jerry Brown. Now, I bring his name up for a reason. He's run for president before. He knows what it takes to run a national campaign for the presidency. And there's no love lost between the Clintons, especially Bill Clinton and Jerry Brown. Now, supposedly they've made up, and Jerry Brown has made clear, at least through today, that he's not going to run for president. He still has time, though. I think if he was going to run, he's not going to announce until sometime in the fall, after Labor Day. In other words, sometime in September, if he announces. What would push Jerry Brown to go back on his stated position that he's not going to be running? And this is why I don't think Hillary is a sure thing. She's not a sure thing. There's just too much baggage there that at any time could have a real negative impact on her campaign. Now, what does she have going for her? That's not hard to understand. It's the media, primarily television, because the bias of what's called or referred to as mainstream media, they are largely progressives, and the older ones are liberals. They're liberal progressives, and they're almost always Democrat. And I say almost always, we're talking 90-95% level. They don't even see what they report as being biased. The media in this country, primarily the three major television networks, I'm excluding Fox, are going to be 100% behind Hillary Clinton, just as they were 100% behind Barack Obama. In other words, she is their candidate. And never forget it. Never forget it. Republicans seem to have a bad habit of forgetting that. They're not your friends. They're not. They will try their best to protect her or minimize the damage from news that can be very damning, if not fatal, to other candidates. I'm disappointed in the Republican Party because they've never really gotten to the bottom of the Benghazi situation as to what was going on, and I really think that they never will. They simply will not explore the primary reason the CIA was in Benghazi. And what's ironic about this, I don't blame Hillary Clinton as much as to what happened in Benghazi as I do the CIA and the fact that the president ordered them in. Now, where she has a lot of responsibility is the fact that the security was simply not enough, and they knew of it. The ambassador was pleading for more security, and he wasn't given it. And no one has really been fired from the Department of State. They've moved the bodies around, but they're still there. They circle the wagons, and they're doing it for an obvious reason. What was noticeable about the speech she gave Saturday is the lack of any references to her experience, if you will, if you can call it that. I would call it her incompetence as Secretary of State. She can't run on that record because Obama's foreign policy has been an unmitigated disaster, and she is largely responsible for that. Not completely. The president calls the shots. She was the one pushing for intervention in Libya. It didn't work out too good, did it? So she's not really going to highlight her experience in the State Department. Let me give you another example besides Benghazi that I think could hurt her. She broke the law when she set up a server and was communicating with people not only within the State Department, but people inside and outside the government, using her own email account on her own server. Why is that a problem? If she had followed the law and the State Department's procedure, she would have used a government server, namely of the State Department, that would have taken at least minimum security precautions, including encryption. to make sure that foreign governments were not privy to what she was discussing in the thousands of emails that she both sent and received. You see, foreign governments, especially their intelligence services, just like the National Security Agency, and to a lesser extent, the Central Intelligence Agency, are spying on government officials, and they, foreign governments, spy on Hillary Clinton. And as far as I'm concerned, I have no personal direct knowledge, but I have a strong opinion that more than one foreign government has most, if not all, of Hillary Clinton's email. That is a massive security breach and really exposes her to blackmail by these governments. Ladies and gentlemen, this is serious stuff. But the Clintons think they're above the law. Why? Because they've gotten away with it for years, decades. They do it because they can, and they have, and they've never really paid a price. Oh, there have been, Bill Clinton did lose his law license, I understand. When I say a price, I mean being indicted, tried, and sent away. And unless you do that, you're never going to get these people's attention. They truly believe that the laws don't apply to them. And that's who you want to elect president? You see, I can say all this and even tell people, listen, don't believe me. Do your own homework. I'll give you some pointers, references. Check it out yourself. Come, have an open mind. Come to your own conclusion. And I've done that on occasion. What's the problem with that? I bet you not 1 in 100 will do that. Most will blindly accept what Hillary Clinton says as fact. And they'll vote for her because she's a woman. They'll vote for her because she's white. They'll vote for her because she's a liberal or progressive. And when elections turn on identity politics, and many, if not most, elections do, who's right doesn't matter. You could be 100% right on the issues, and you can get your message out. It's clear, concise, it communicates, but it's not listened to, largely because many people have already made up their mind. I call it invincible ignorance. Don't confuse me with the facts. I've already made up my mind. I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman. She's a baby boomer. She's a Democrat. She's a liberal. She's a progressive. She cares about me. Well, if you do, don't come to me complaining, because I think she is worse than Barack Obama. And that is a very low standard to meet or exceed. With one exception, I think Barack Obama is by far the worst president this country has ever had. Full stop, period. And a part of the problem was he simply was inexperienced, and he spent most of his time being a community organizer, which is another way to say he was a troublemaker. He tried to shake down businesses. That's what he was about. Jesse Jackson, as well as Reverend Sharpton, that's what they're about. And they succeed because you have companies, especially large companies, that agree to be shaken down. Now, one more point before I turn to Jeb Bush. And this is what even is more frightening. Barack Obama, as well as Hillary Clinton, are front men and front man or front woman for very, very powerful interests. And it's not just the unions. It's some of the wealthiest people in this country that have an agenda, want certain things accomplished. And because they provide the money, and we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars when you add it all up, they not only have access, but it's very much a quid pro quo. They are expecting certain things to be done with no questions asked. That's who you're voting for, a front person. And very little attempt is made to try to identify who are this person's supporters. I'm not talking the person that sends $1 or $5 or $100 or even $1,000 as a campaign contribution. These people make huge contributions. I know some of you guys say, well, don't they have campaign contribution limits? Yes, they do. But today we have super PACs, and I'm all for super PACs. That's where people that have a lot of money will donate a lot of money. As long as the candidate does not coordinate with that super PAC, the super PAC can make the case for that candidate. And they do. Both parties do. And I'm for more political speech. The more the merrier, the more money, fine. I'm not one of these people that want to limit campaign contributions, whether directly to the candidate, to the party, or their super PAC. I'm for maximum political speech. And that means maximum, you can spend your fortune if you want. Now, most people that are extremely wealthy don't need to. They buy politicians on the cheap. They do. Now, admittedly, on a presidential level, it's a little bit more, let's say, higher contributions are expected. Not so if you're just running for a House seat. A little bit more expensive if it's of a Senate seat. But these people, what we would consider, for example, a good annual salary, this is pocket change for them. Chump change. Carrying around money. And actually, they don't carry it around. They have somebody else carry it around for them. But they go out and buy politicians. And it's been going on throughout the history of mankind. It's nothing new here, but it's not talked about. So remember, Hillary Clinton is very much a front person. She's doing the bidding of certain groups in this country. Yes, yes, the unions. But also the executives of some of the largest corporations in the United States, as well as the trial bar, the attorneys. Put that, keep in mind that that's what's going on, because there's a tendency, and I'm guilty of it, is to blame the president or blame the candidate. There's a reason candidates take positions on various issues, because the positions they take agree with their major contributors. It's not hard to understand. It's quid pro quo. I'll give you something if you give something in return. That is the way American politics, as well as politics throughout the century, has been played. And the United States is not immune from it. So you need to keep that in mind and ask yourself, okay, who really supports Hillary Clinton? To a certain extent, you can pierce that veil, but most people don't spend the time. I don't spend that much time. I can find, if I want, who her major contributors are. And occasionally you will get an article in a newspaper detailing that. Now I want to switch to Jeb Bush, the former conservative governor of Florida. I listened to some of his announcement speech, and I was impressed, but what kept going through my mind is there's several issues, and I've said this on earlier shows. The big one for me is Jeb Bush is soft on illegal immigration. If he really could, he'd be for open borders, but he can't say that. If he did, he would never get the nomination. So he has to mislead or lie or flip-flop or do what he needs to do to fool you. You see, we're getting back to trust again. The Bush family are what used to be called Rockefeller Republicans, what today are called Rhino Republicans, Republicans in name only. They are progressive Republicans. Fine. What does that mean? They're for big government. We're expanding the size and the scope of big government. Now, if I really were for that and thought that the answer to most society's problems is another program out of Washington, would I vote Republican? No. I'd vote for the real deal. I'd vote for the Democratic Party. That's what they've been about for decades. You know, if you were alive in the 30s, you could have voted for Roosevelt or Truman. In the 60s, for LBJ and John F. Kennedy. And in this century, for Barack Obama or John Kerry. Ooh, that is scary. So I don't see a choice. I see an echo, but I don't see a choice. All the Bush families, very nice people, but they are for bigger government. Always have been and always will be. And George, I keep calling him George. Jeb Bush is soft on illegal immigration. If he had his way, the 30 to 50 million illegal aliens that are here would all be given citizenship. He would go along with exactly what the Democratic Party wants. There is one difference. He would do it by statute. In other words, he'd pass a law. See, he also agrees with President Obama that immigration is a mess. And that's one of the tip-offs. Your ears should listen closely. When they start the immigration immigration is a mess. We need comprehensive immigration reform. What haven't they said? What are the two things that they haven't said? Why is it a mess? Who caused this mess? One is his brother, George W., and now Barack Obama. Why? They did not vigorously enforce immigration law. And I'm talking more than so-called securing the borders. See, I have been in Texas, and I have seen the invasion of illegal aliens into Dallas. And it was an invasion. It's still going on. But Dallas is just one city. Now, it is in one of the 12 states that have by far the largest number of illegal aliens. Texas and California and Florida. Oh, now what quickly needs to be said? Why is Jeb Bush weak on immigration? And so is Rick Perry, for that matter. And definitely Jerry Brown is. Why? Is it hard to figure out why? Not really. What's the one common denominator of those three states? And actually several of the other states. They have a large agricultural, in other words, farming and ranching sectors. And they rely on immigrants, largely from Mexico, but from other countries too. In other words, cheap, compliant labor to not only, well, primarily to harvest the crops, but they need them as workers in that sector. Doesn't mean there are not other states that have the same situation. Now, what's my issue with that? What aren't they talking about? They're not talking about the fact that the American people oppose illegal immigration or illegal aliens. We have a system in place called legal immigration that every year allows in over 1 million people. And if you talk to the American people, most people are not aware of that. We are by far the most generous nation in terms of allowing immigrants to come to this country. We're the number one nation in immigration. There's not anyone really close. We're very, very generous. The American people didn't ask for it. The American people are for legal immigration, but not 1 million plus every year. But if you ask them, are they for illegal immigration, they will say overwhelmingly no. They're against it. They oppose it. They want immigration law enforced. Yet the two big government parties in this country, the Republican and Democratic parties, and their leadership, are for open borders. This invasion of this nation, this country, could be stopped on a dime if we had a president that would make clear to everybody he will enforce immigration law, not only at the border to stop the immediate invasion, but also within the country and go after the employers, tens of thousands of employers, that hire these illegal aliens. There's laws on the books that make this a crime with substantial fines. The problem is neither a Republican president nor a Democratic president will enforce the law. The last Republican president that enforced the law was general or elected president of the United States, Dwight David Eisenhower in the 50s. That's the last time we had, really, the enforcement of immigration law. And the federal government didn't really do its job because it relied on local police to really enforce the law. And you got complaints then that the police were not doing their regular duties. Ladies and gentlemen, the immigration problem is a federal problem, and the mess has been caused by the federal government, and it starts at the top. The presidents, whether it's George W. Bush or Barack Obama, are not making it first a priority and making it very clear to the entire bureaucracy, starting with the Department of Homeland Security, I want immigration law enforced. They're not doing it. They're not going after businesses. That's the heart of the problem. Now, I don't agree with Romney on much, but he said it when he ran the first time. Immigration will never be stopped and will until we turn off the magnet that's attracting him. And what is the magnet? It is employers, mainly businesses, that are hiring him. And it's not just businesses. It's also cities, states, counties, colleges. I'm in a sanctuary city that's aiding, abetting crime, aiding and abetting illegal aliens living and working here. Now, there's a lot of finger-pointing. It is the federal government's responsibility. Look in the Constitution. It's the federal government's responsibility under the Constitution to assist the states in defending the states from invasion. We've had an invasion. So that my biggest problem with George Bush is immigration. And that is a hot-button issue with me, and I'm looking at all the candidates real close. Because a lot of them, not a lot, but a number of them can be very, very strong on illegal immigration, or at least they sound strong. But there's two parts to this. One, you got to enforce existing law. And if you don't provide the resources that the Department of Homeland Security needs in terms of judges, attorneys, investigators, officers to enforce the law, it's never going to be enforced. Never. It'll be some token enforcement. You got to turn off that magnet. Imagine if you go home tonight and on a television news, you hear of a story that ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, raided a large company in Dallas and arrested several of the top executives of that company, and they marched them out. And the news media was there to get pictures. And then we saw a bus with all the illegal aliens on the bus going to the airport to be deported. Don't you think that would send a message? Oh, I think it would. You're next. Have you seen that lately? I haven't seen that in years. You can't tell me that in Dallas and every major state and city where we have tens of thousands of illegal aliens, that they're not employers hiring illegal aliens. There are many games they play to get around the law, but they're hiring them. They're working. They're working on this college campus. But that's the entire country. And what sticks in my craw, when you hire an illegal alien, who are you not hiring? You're not hiring an American worker, an American citizen. And then you wonder why the economy is stagnating? Look in the mirror. Look in the mirror. See, at one time, the unions were really against immigration, in particular, illegal immigration. Why? It hurt their members. Not anymore. Not anymore. They've cut a deal. Now, the Democratic Party wants to do it for one thing, one reason. They want to dominate and have a single party in the United States. And if they can get comprehensive immigration reform through the Congress, they will succeed. And it might be decades, if not a century, before the Republicans gain back the House, the Senate, and the presidency. That's the long-range strategy of the Democratic Party. Now, you might ask, well, what's in it for the Republicans? I'll tell you. It's campaign contributions. It's no accident that Jeb Bush, in terms of money that he's raised, is in the number one position. Do you think that's an accident? Because the people with the money are saying, we want open borders. We want cheap and compliant labor. And we know Jeb Bush is our kind of guy. He's our kind of guy. What about the American work, especially those that are unemployed? Not brought up. I am real tired of politicians, as well as their defenders on talk radio, going on and on and on. Oh, we have to give legal status or a pathway to citizenship to the illegal aliens that are here. Bring them out of the shadows. Ladies and gentlemen, they're not in the shadows. They're in your grocery stores. They're in your schools. They're in your gardens. They're on construction sites. They're in meatpacking plants. They're in factories. All jobs that Americans in the past, present, and the future should be doing and have done. I'll put it so even Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton can understand. American citizens should come first, not illegal aliens that are broken the law repeatedly and do so every day when they live and work without legal status in this country. Now, the second thing you got to be very careful of. People can be on my side regarding illegal immigration, but here is where you have to be real careful and listen real close to what senators, representatives, and even presidential candidates say, because they can be real strong or hard line, if you will, on illegal immigration. Yet if you ask them and press them regarding legal immigration, oh, we want the number of visas increased by fivefold. In other words, we want, instead of 1 million people a year coming here, 2 million, and then 3 million. Be careful. There are candidates that are supposedly tough on immigration, illegal immigration, but are real weak when it comes to legal immigration. You need to look at their positions on both. Otherwise, you're going to be fooled by them. And see, Jeb Bush is off my, will never get on the short list, because he's a big government conservative. He's an interventionist, both in the domestic economy and abroad. And on one of my hot button issues, namely immigration, he fails the test. So he'll never get my vote, nor will Hillary Clinton. For all practical purposes, it doesn't matter. And see, that's what the powers that be, the wealth, want. It doesn't matter who you vote for, because they win. Whether it's Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush, they win. They're backing both horses. With that, I have to wrap up the show. Tomorrow, I most likely will do a story on, or at least an update on the trade, where the fast track legislation stands. Right now, supposedly they were going to have a vote. I don't know if they're going to have a vote or not. If they don't have a vote tomorrow, they'll probably delay it. Because the Republicans, I'm a free trader. For most of the bills, I agree with it. But the problem I have is in the area of immigration. So I'll be discussing that tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed our show. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.